Can we get started, please? Can I just note to tell you that this meeting will be recorded and the sound recording will subsequently be available via the council's website on charnwood.gov.uk/pages/committees. In addition, please be
It's a catchy name.
In addition, please be advised that the openness of the Local Government Bodies Regulation 2014 that other people may film, record, tweet or blog from this meeting. The use of any images or sound recording is not under the Council's control. If you have any queries about these arrangements, please speak to the Democratic Services Officer who is administering the meeting. Thank you very much. We have no apologies.
No.
What's the matter with this thing? It's all right, got it. I'm going to try and use both tonight. It's not going to be very easy, but I'm trying to get used to this piece of equipment, as I'm sure you all are. Minutes of the previous meeting. Have you all had the opportunity to read them? Mm-hmm. Are you all in favour that I sign them as a true record?
Yeah.
I'll do it afterwards. Yeah.
Chair, can I just ask a question on page 6 on the minutes?
You may.
It's to do with item 7, member grant scheme. You recall that we took an urgent item and the recommendation that we, the decision that we made is set out there that we supported the chief executive's suggestion. However, that didn't play out and I understand that separate meetings have been held by the cabinet lead who looks at these applications and decides. I think we've all had one notification as members. I think for the record, I think as a committee we should have really had a report about that change so that it was on record.
Okay, Carrot for the recording, Karen Widdowson, Democratic Services Manager. So subsequent to the Member Conduct Committee, the decision was referred to Cabinet and the leader of the council took an executive decision, which is within his power, to actually delegate to one of the individual cabinet members, which was Councillor Taylor. So subsequently, she has now had two what's called executive decision days to consider those particular grant applications. So that was the course of events. It was referred to Cabinet. The leader then took an executive decision to delegate the decision to one of his cabinet members, and that was all recorded, etc. So but it's good to record that as an outcome from the meeting.
Thank you, Councillor Draycott. So is that now regarded as a formal committee in a sense?
So it's a the way the constitution is written at the moment, we have to hold those as decision days. However, as part of the annual review of the constitution, I'm looking at having it so that it's a bit more streamlined, so that decision making can be so Councillor Taylor can make a decision on a Thursday. We still have to give due notice, the 5 clear working days. However, we don't need to have that necessary decision day because the meetings are literally at lasting maybe 5 minutes at the most.
Yeah.
So, but that's at the moment we can't change that. We need to change that in the constitution.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Disclosures of pecuniary and personal interest. Anyone got any?
Madam Chair, Councillor Marchant, I am aware that complaints have been submitted by members of the council, of which I am also a member. If they are, and they will, if they are going to be discussed in detail in item 5, I would propose to leave the room. Okay. But I am open to advise it.
Thank you very much. Thank you. Right, questions under committee procedure?
None.
Update of complaints received, pages 8 to 12 of your
Yeah,
with your document.
Okay, Chairman, this is Karen Widdowson again. So in total, we've had 9 complaints in 2018-19 so far. 4 of those have been borough councillor complaints. 1 case was invoked through the monitoring officer protocol following concerns raised by officers, and the investigation found no breaches of the code. And 3 complaints about 1 councillor have been received, and that investigation is still in progress at the present time. I must also report that since the agenda was published, we've had another complaint about a borough councillor as well. I'm investigating that, but it looks like it will be resolved informally on that particular occasion. And in addition, we've had 5 parish councillor complaints. 2 have been completed and no breaches of the code have been found, and 3 are at the fact-finding stage at the present time, and so still in progress. Thank you.
Yes, one of the complaints was for a borough councillor who, it was found after 2 meetings that there was no breach of the code of conduct, as far as we could see. He's quite happy for us to name him. He's quite happy for us to talk about this, to bring things forward so that it can help with things like this that happen in the future.
Mm-hmm.
You all know that it was Councillor Mercer. He's quite happy for us to use his name. And through the all 6 complaints, we asked for 3 to be looked at in depth, and we found that there was no breach of the code of conduct by him. But it has raised 1 or 2 problems with regards to how the complaints were made. The complaints were not put in writing by the officers. They were spoken complaints, which and verbal complaints to the monitoring officer, who felt, because of the constitution, he had to take it further.
And if I can just interject, if I can interject just to say that the monitoring officer protocol is on the next agenda item, so we can discuss it as part of that if you wish to have that removed or not, because that request has come through from that one and same council as well.
Through you, Chair, would you like me to minute that particular councillor Mercer has not actually breached the code of conduct?
Yes.
Councillor Hadzi Nicolaou, thank you for informing us about this story, but I'm a bit confused. What is the nature of the complaints? Is this actually, are we allowed to know the nature of the complaint? We know actually there's a councillor complaint. He's exonerated. Mm-hmm. He's exonerated, obviously, but what's the nature of that?
It is not normal protocol that we would discuss in an open session the detail of the breaches and the allegations. However, this councillor has asked that it be recorded that no breach has been found, and he was happy for him to be his name to be disclosed. However, the detail we are not. It would not be appropriate to discuss the officers concerned the concerns were raised through the monitoring officer.
Thank you very much. I'm still being a bit confused. We are a members conduct committee. So as members conduct committee, are we allowed actually to know the nature of the complaints?
Well, I was going to say that there is a member conduct panel was held, and the information was made public within a certain amount, so I can send you the link to the agenda and the minutes that were written from that panel that are in the public domain.
Thank you.
And that would give you the information.
Councillor Draycott.
Yes, thank you, Chair. Councillor Draycott, just you're saying put on record that no breach was found and he was exonerated. but it wasn't straightforward in that we also agreed as a panel, because I sat on the panel, that there were certain actions that needed to be done, which has been referred to by Karen and that. So it's not quite saying that everything was hunky-dory and clear. There was a lot more, particularly about staff and what have you, that as a panel we looked at. So I don't think it's quite so simple as to put a sentence that no breach was found. I think that there would need to be a bit more that, you know, that the panel agreed other actions or something on the matter.
Through you, Chair, I could put the link in the minutes that has the information that was in the public domain.
So anybody could go through there and then just find, because it's all listed there, isn't it, in the minutes.
Councillor
Mullins. Yeah, it's obviously a bit unusual to kind of put a sentence in the minutes to say that anyone was found, you know, not in breach. I've not heard of that before, but I've not been on this committee for years and years. But I think it is factual, isn't it? There wasn't a breach of the code. So I think if we did put that, but include a link to the report, then I think that's fine. But looking at the agenda and Karen's pointed out, that kind of comes under the next heading as to what we do about the constitution. And how complaints are made, so I think that's probably on the next item, really.
Have we finished with that item?
So it's a case of just noting that report in the, as it stands. Thank you.
I'm struggling with this. The next item on the agenda is review of the Constitution. Can I hand over to Karen to sort out what we're going to look at on this?
Thank you, Chairman. So the annual review of the Constitution has come round again. There are actually two matters for consideration by the Member Conduct Committee tonight. One is listed on page 15, which is regarding the monitoring officer protocol, and the second is regarding additional training requirements and information that's come from the Member Development Reference Group. So dealing first with the monitoring officer protocol, as set out on page 15, the Constitution currently states that the monitoring officer will, where appropriate, make inquiries into allegations of misconduct in the absence of a written complaint being received, and if appropriate, will make a written report to the Member Conduct Committee unless the monitoring officer considers a report is not warranted. And I highlight the point there, in the absence of a written complaint. So the matter before you tonight is to consider whether this sentence, this section, should be removed from the monitoring officer protocol, bearing in mind that Adrian, as the monitoring officer who couldn't make it tonight, has done some research and has actually found that other local authorities do not have that in their constitution. And also, if you were minded to remove it from the constitution, what would be the consequence of that? So if the monitoring officer did become aware of any allegations or any issues, what would be the mechanism and what would be the expectations of the Member Conduct Committee? So if we deal with that one first, and then we can go on to the training matter, which is more straightforward.
Yeah, I think it should be removed. Also, Councillor Bentley for the take. I think it should be removed because I don't think it's the... I think if somebody has... if somebody wants to make a complaint, it should be the person themselves making the complaint. I don't think that somebody else should have that power to be able to do that. If somebody doesn't feel as if strongly enough about something, as the case we've just been discussing, I think it was flawed, quite honestly, and it does need removing. What you want to what we need to replace it with exactly, I'm not sure. That's open to the debate. That's my opening gambit.
Councillor Rollins and then Councillor.
Yeah, I would agree with Councillor Bentley. I mean, my personal view is that if there is a complaint to be made, it ought to be put to the monitoring officer in writing. if I was to make some outrageous comments at this meeting now, I'd fully expect that one of you would make a written complaint and set out what I've done wrong and why you think I've breached the code of conduct, or the or ask the monitoring officer to investigate a potential breach. I think the idea that the monitoring officer, and although I've got absolute faith in our monitoring officer, I do think that to leave it so open that they can just investigate anything without a written complaint is a problem. If you think, if you look at how the police would deal with stuff, they wouldn't just go off and investigate something if no one's prepared to give a statement, because what's the point? And I think that the monitoring officer, in circumstances where he thinks something has arisen, he can say, look, I know about this situation, here are the options available to you, you're entitled to make a written complaint to me, which I will then investigate, and that's the process that should be followed. But I think to not have a complaint put in writing to set out what the case is that you as a councillor are expected to answer is problematic. That's my opinion.
Okay, thank you.
Councillor Hadzi-Nicolaou. Now, I have a little concern about this, because we are in a big organization, you have a lot of little people. Sorry, I use the word little people, actually low rank officers. And of course, you have actually significant higher ranks, and you have other people around, councillors, etc. And the low rank officers, they really feel intimidated sometimes and very much afraid of actually putting a complaint in. Because you see, what is happening when you put the complaint in certain organizations, if that complaint does not go through, then actually there is actually more bullying and harassment towards these lower-rank officers who try to complain. So we need to have a mechanism to have actually these lower-rank officers protected. And if you see this clause here, where actually the monitoring officer can actually proceed with an inquiry in the absence of a written complaint, is exactly to protect actually these people who are afraid to put a complaint in. So that's my little concern here.
Councillor Draycott.
Yes, thank you, Chair. This does actually come from our previous discussion and came out of the panel. And we all felt on the panel that it was a weakness not having a formal complaint. And there was a number that we looked at first of all. But because they'd built up and they were referred to as concerns by the officers, right, then monitoring officer thought something needed to be done. And, you know, it's in the constitution and that's why he did it. But we felt it was a weakness. Mm-hmm. And we weren't talking about staff lower down. These were senior staff and it was against a member. Because if it was a member of staff, they'd probably go to the union or something, right? So this is where an officer has got a complaint about a member. But it put us at a disadvantage because it wasn't a formal complaint. And that was clearly felt by everybody on the panel. So I would support what's been said. I think that if you feel strongly enough about something, you make a formal complaint.
Can I just come in here? I agreed at the time, and I still agree that it should be in writing. But supposing, let me put a scenario to you. Supposing it was someone, of a young person that had just joined the company that was being sexually harassed, and then put it into writing.
That would be a staffing matter, unless you're saying it's by a member.
Well,
that's wrong.
Surely that would be a criminal matter that we would then pick up if the prosecution's been pursued. I wouldn't have thought that would be something that we would look at, and I don't.
So you would expect the monitoring officer to tell this person if she'd been to see him?
Report it to the police.
Absolutely, I'd expect that.
We can make a note to that officer there.
I'm not saying there shouldn't be a subsequent investigation, but.
Councillor Ransom, then, please.
If we are considering taking this paragraph out of our constitution, is there another way we can actually reword this to actually make it more official and officious in the sense of the people, all genders and all sections of our working people have got something that they can put into either writing, or can they do it? I think something has got to be put. I agree that it's very much of a, you know, a bit of a way from strafe, but we have to have something there that people can actually get their point across and not be frightened.
This was one of the problems that came out of it, was the fact that they were worried about making a complaint. This is why it was just concerns that they had rather than a complaint that came through to us. And this was one of the things. And we have sent out a letter signed by the three members of the panel to the officers concerned, explaining that if they go through the proper protocol, then their complaints will be heard fairly and openly by member conduct if they've got problems against a member.
But I can see where Mary's coming from, that on a couple of instances they have not had teeth to the actual complaint, in the sense was it was a verbal complaint. And I believe if you want to have teeth to a complaint, you have to actually have it in writing, if I'm right. I'm sat beside the solicitor here. So
it was all six of the concerns were verbal.
Yes.
There was none of them put in writing, unfortunately.
I think just as the clerk to the member conduct panel, it's probably worth bringing your attention back to the fact that the monitoring officer consulted with the chief executive on this particular case. And I think it was the number of complaints and the number of people that raised those issues which is what made him act in this particular instance. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I don't think he would take that section and then just act willy-nilly, if you see what I mean.
But surely we have a protocol in line. I know I'm coming from the health authority, like my friend on my left here, is that you have a line manager you first complain verbally to, and then you actually, if that feel that they ask you to put it in writing, there's that protocol you have got to go through for stages of complaints. Surely maybe we should, our code of conduct should, I don't know whether we should actually introduce that instead of what's here. Do you understand where I'm coming from?
Yes. Let me point out that these were all senior people at the top of the line management. Were they not?
No.
Well, we don't know who they were.
You do, because it was written in the actual report.
Yeah, we do.
Mm. And the people on the panel, I think, probably know, and there's some of them around the table at the moment, but it's concerning. I agree with it's a bit on balance. We have got to put a some sort of a line in there to make it as balanced as proper as possible for every individual that works for Charnwood Borough Council. And that's my personal.
Councillor Hadji first, and then Councillor.
I fully agree with Councillor Ransom. I'm coming actually from the NHS. And as we speak now, I'm just going through a very big case where actually people were bullied and harassed by a very senior member for the last 2 years, and nobody put actually a written complaint ever because they were afraid. So this is actually what we are dealing with, and we should not allow this to happen to our council. So we need to, I'm not criticizing this particular paragraph, I'm just saying, I fully agree with Councillor Ransom. We need to put mechanisms in place to protect people.
Councillor Draycott and then Councillor Rollins.
Yes, thank you, Chair. Councillor Draycott, I believe there are safeguards and precautions in place. And anyone who's really interested in this case is, as advised earlier, is to go into the minutes and have a look. Because as the Chair has said, one of the things that we all did was to say that just to announce that there's no breach is not enough, because what we didn't want is for officers to think, oh, they did nothing at all about it. So a letter was very carefully worded with Adrian's help, and it was to emphasise the fact that, you know, the panel listened, took everything into account, but we were limited because it wasn't a formal complaint. And we would urge you in the future, you know, were such a thing to happen, to make a formal complaint. Yeah. It was quite a lengthy letter. And as the Chair says, and we hope that that sent a good message through, that we listened, but really a formal complaint is what's needed.
Councillor Anson, again, I'm terribly sorry, but the fact is, I can agree with you, Mary, totally, but the fact is we have to have some mechanisms in place for somebody to get to that stage of a formal complaint.
But I think that's there.
Councillor
Rollins.
If we look at paragraph 27 of the member officer protocol, it's got in here that if an officer had cause to complain about the conduct of a member, they may make a complaint to the monitoring officer if they consider the conduct involves a breach of the member's code of conduct. If an officer considers that the conduct does not involve a breach of code of conduct but is still in breach of this protocol or council codes and protocols, they should make a complaint, preferably in writing. So it's not saying it's got to be in writing, to the monitoring officer. So I think it's covered anyway. I think we're kind of worrying about something that
which paragraph was that, the member 27, let me just check what section it's chapter 22
member officer relations, and it's paragraph 27, and I think that gives us the comfort that members are looking for
tonight. I agree with that one.
27.
So there's a protocol in place for if it's not a breach but there's still a problem, so it can still be addressed there. So it's covered, it's there.
Right, so you're all happy with that then?
So we delete it.
So on the basis that it's covered off already in the member and officer protocol, paragraph 27, that you're content with that.
Yeah. I think that's going to be emphasised in the minutes, personally. That's only my...
Can I just have a show of hands to make sure that you're all in? So that's unanimous, isn't it? Yeah. Thank you. So moving on to the second matter, which is an additional matter which I want to raise. So I don't know if you know, but there's a member development reference group which looks at the member development programme and the induction programme for councillors as part of our member development charter status. And probably in the last term, or in the beginning of the last term, so we're talking 2 or 3 years ago, there was the member development reference group suggested that the training requirement for councillors should be strengthened in respect of the audit committee, the personnel committee and the licensing committee. So for example, at the moment the licensing committee, in the constitution it says members cannot participate in licensing committees or subcommittee meetings unless they have attended the appropriate training on relevant licensing matters prescribed by the head of strategic support. And very similar wording is used for the audit committee. The personnel committee is a little bit more elaborate, and it will say members cannot participate in the personnel committee and panels unless they have attended appropriate training on relevant personnel matters prescribed by the head of strategic support, or they have had previous substantial involvement in the matter under consideration. So this is what's set out in the constitution at the moment, but the member development reference group would like to make it more mandatory in terms of those three committees. And I'm making a suggestion that members of those three committees must attend the mandatory training or its equivalent at the start of each council term to maintain their eligibility. So for example, if a member is currently on the personnel committee, and come the elections, they are then appointed again onto the personnel committee. At the moment, the way the constitution is written, there is no requirement that they have to go on the mandatory personnel training again. And having this sentence in would actually strengthen that, so it would relate to audit committee, personnel, and licensing committee as well.
Another sentence I was going to add in was, but this does not relate to licensing because licensing committees substitutes are not allowed. So other councillors are allowed to substitute for members of the committee who are absent using procedures set out in the committee procedures. In order to maintain eligibility to participate in meetings, a councillor must have attended mandatory training or equivalent in the current council year. So basically the same requirement for substitutes as well, that they have to attend mandatory training but not for licensing, because licensing committees we don't allow in the constitution substitutes. Hopefully that makes sense to what I'm saying, and I think it seems a very good suggestion.
Councillor Paul Murphy, I'm a member of the member reference group, and this was brought up because rules and regulations change, and if you haven't done at least one mandatory training in the term, things do change in everyday life. The laws change, regulations change. I mean, it's keeping up to date, and we're just having it that, I mean, we all know we've got to keep up to date, but if it's in the constitution, it's a lot better than, because I mean, you don't know everything all the time, things change, and if you're going on old facts and figures, perhaps it's not the way to be.
Councillor Kazimikola again. Why this applies only for three committees and not for every committee?
If I can elaborate, so plans committee, that has very detailed planning training requirements set out in the planning code of conduct section of the constitution, and that is actually you've got to have attended a training event within a year. So once you're out of that year, you can't actually sit on the plans committee, and that applies to substitutes as well. Yeah. So plans committee is very detailed.
So which are the exempt committees?
Exempt
committees? Yeah, where you don't need to do mandatory training to participate.
This one.
So actually, if I can refer, member conduct committee in the constitution, members are recommended to attend any appropriate training prescribed by the monitoring officer before attending any member conduct panel meetings. So if you go on a member conduct panel meeting, it is recommended that you attend appropriate training. It's not mandatory, it's recommended.
Why?
Because at the present time, that's how it reads in the constitution. You may wish to say it's mandatory. That's your decision this evening. And appeals and reviews, again, that is the same as appeals and reviews, that is recommended to attend appropriate training before attending any appeals and review committee meetings. So, for example, tree preservation order meetings, that sort of thing.
I remember when, I'll come back to you, I remember when I first came on the council almost 4 years ago, mm-hmm. that I attended I was on a lot more committees than I am now, but I attended training on the first night of that meeting. Mm-hmm. And we couldn't sit as a sub on that meeting unless we'd actually done the training. And mm-hmm. But it wasn't quite so stringent as it is on the other three, mm-hmm. The four with the Plans Committee. But I do know that the Plans Committee held one meeting, and if you didn't attend, you either had to go in for one-to-one training.
Yes.
Or you couldn't sit on it as a sub on it. Mm-hmm. So the Plans Committee would do that. I do know the licensing, you're not allowed to sub on it. I don't know why, but you're not. Mm-hmm. The other two, I've sat on both the Audit Commission, the Audit one, I've sat on it, so I must have done the training. Mm. But I can't remember for the life of me when I did it. But anyway, Roy, sorry.
I completely agree with the idea. I think that members absolutely need to be trained and aware of what's going on before they take decisions. My only slight concern is, if in a new council year, what's going to happen if you can't get enough people trained? Because there is a perception, not my perception, that planning committee, for example, is a bit more juicy and more people want to sit on that, so they're probably more likely to go to the training. But are you going to get the same take of a personnel committee? And what happens if you don't get enough members trained quickly enough after a new council year? Mm. I mean, I completely support the idea. I'm just thinking practically, what would we do?
So maybe a sanction would be that if a member has not been on that training in the new council year, that they cannot sit on that committee. At the moment, the Constitution doesn't say that, but it certainly says that for the Plans Committee, so you might want to consider that as a possibility.
What if enough people just don't train? That's my worry. I mean, maybe I'm thinking about something that's never going to happen, but I don't know.
Yeah, if I can just come in as clerk, what happened in 2015 is that before each committee meeting, Councillor Tassel is correct, before each committee meeting, you've got people that have been allocated to those committees through the full council, and before each committee meeting, you would have a briefing. Okay. And so every committee meeting would have the training.
Great.
Now, in the case of personnel, which I also caught, that was a proper formal mandatory training, and it was recorded as such.
Yeah, good.
That is how it's captured. And so I think if you've been allocated to that committee, you have a responsibility then to sort of take the mandatory training.
And is that what we're planning for the next council year as well, I guess?
Yes.
Great.
It was a meeting of the Member Development Reference Group last week, which Councillor Murphy actually chaired that meeting, and we had the draft Member Development Programme at that meeting.
Great.
So we are looking at mandatory training and having it in place before meetings, yes.
Yeah. In that case, I completely support the idea. Just checking.
Councillor Fetinicola again. I very much actually concerned about what Roy mentioned just now about training enough people actually to sit in committees and business to go ahead. Now, I think actually in my mind it is more practical actually to make the induction course mandatory for every committee and consolidate actually these courses in, you know, one or two sessions. So to say, for example, you set actually a particular Tuesday and it will be between 6 o'clock and 9 o'clock, and the first hour will be for that committee, second hour, so somebody will spend 3 hours, will be training actually for three different committees, instead of actually having one training here, one training there, and you don't really know what's happening. It's much better actually to consolidate the training in one big session or two big sessions.
I think if it's at the start of the first committee meeting or before the first committee meeting of the new year, I think that's fine, because I, for example, wouldn't want to sit through a planning committee training or licensing, because I know I'm never going to sit on either of those committees. So I think as long as it's at the start of or just before a meeting of that relevant committee at the start of the council year, that's fine. I was just a bit worried that, say, we just don't get enough people trained in the first 2 weeks of the council year, and suddenly we can't actually sit on any committees because we've not got enough people trained. But
don't forget, all committees are available for any councillor or even the public to come and listen to. So if you come to a committee meeting and you want to be trained into it, there's nothing to stop you from coming to that meeting if you want to sub on it at any time, even if you're not. If you've not been put on it by the lead member, there is nothing to stop you from coming on that committee and listening and joining in the training, so that you've got that, as long as your name is put on the sheet to say you've done the training. Councillor Ransom?
Yeah, please. I think that's correct, because I think it's quite good if the allocated members are on a committee and you're having a pre-briefing committee training, then those allocated members will turn up because they're allocated. And I think prior to the meeting, is before the date, an email can go out and say, and anybody else can, but the members who are allocated by the leader of the council should actually attend that meeting, other than if they can't have a sub as from the beginning of the year. And then that way we will be safety. I think it was safety myself. It's better than having to come out. I can understand what Leon has said, that yes, do it, you know, bullet point sections, but you won't get everybody coming. Mm. So, but if you're actually allocated to that committee, you will actually turn up for that a committee meeting. And if you say, well, turn up at 5:30, throw a little sandwich in there and things like that. And that, you know, food is a great element. It is, yes. But, I agree with Roy that it should be maybe before the meeting, and then everybody is coerced in everything. Myself. It's only my personal view.
Yeah, just to support that, that's basically what I was going to say. I think we should invite all members to all training sessions, yeah. Let them know in advance when they're all going to be, and then we can decide which ones we want to go to in addition, in case we're ever asked to serve or ever volunteer to serve on that committee. Yeah. So I think if we get a date, a list of dates at the start of the council year saying these are all the training dates pre-committees, if you want to go to any others in addition to those that you're allocated to, you're very welcome to, and then you'll be on the list and then you're available as a sub if you want to.
So Karen Widdowson, just to, an idea that came out from the Member Development Reference Group last week was when we know the candidates for the elections in May, we will be writing to them to say that if you are elected and successful, please note these dates in your diary. Mm-hmm. So we're actually going to be telling the candidates. So it's an extra layer, so actually it's not a last minute, oh, I must get these dates into my diary. We are going to write to the candidates and inform them of the dates of training. So overall,
the programme's drafted.
It sounds good.
We're there already.
I'm just wondering where this leaves the parish members, because we don't do any training at all. I mean, somebody just writes them and they put the name forward and that's it, they're on this committee. And they don't know anything about what's going on at all. And to my mind, we should be able to go to some sort of training beforehand.
You can, actually. Is your council a member of the Leicestershire and Rutland Association of Local Councils?
Yes, but they do go to all of those meetings. But there's not always a training for what you want when you want it.
But your clerk could have a word with Jake. I don't know what he is there, but
he's the chief exec.
He could have a word with him. He's just put on a training course for Shepshed on the GDPR.
Yeah.
For us, and don't forget, you pay for your membership, so
yeah, you do.
Therefore, you use them as much as you can.
But it's not going to be all parishes that want this training, because how many years have I sat here on my own? So, you know, it hasn't been necessary, but it is now. We've got more members coming in.
Chair, I'd just like to say that although it may not be classified as formal training, myself, I did receive induction from the monitoring officer and from Karen before coming onto this committee.
Absolutely.
Right. Right. Yeah. Oh, good, I didn't realise that.
Yeah.
Well, you've been on it so long, you probably didn't do it then.
It was very different then.
Yes,
we had a vote to start with.
Don't read out the suggestion again.
Yes.
So,
can we read out the suggestion then that we've got for this removal or amendment of the Constitution, and we'll ask Karen to.
So, in relation to Chapter 5, we're going to keep it the same for the Appeals and Review Committee, the Member Conduct Committee, and the Plans Committee, which is actually also Chapter 24. But in relation to Licensing Committee, Audit Committee, and Personnel Committee and panels, we're going to strengthen the wording in the Constitution to say that members of those committees must attend the mandatory training or its equivalent at the start of each council term to maintain their eligibility. And in addition to that, in relation to the Audit Committee and the Personnel Committee, other councillors are allowed to substitute for members of the committee who are absent using procedures set out in the committee procedures. In order to maintain eligibility to participate in meetings, a councillor must have attended mandatory training or its equivalent in the current council term. So basically, must attend mandatory training, and in the case of substitute councillors, also attend that training as well. Are you all happy with that suggestion?
Yeah, okay. I'm happy with that.
Can we have a vote on it then, please?
Mm-hmm. Agree.
That's unanimous. Thank you.
Right, we'll go on to the review of the Planning Code of Good Practice. Whether we wish to recommend any amendments. I would like to put forward something here for consideration. When an application goes through the plans committee, it is either granted or refused. When, or it can be deferred actually, which has been known. But once a planning application has been granted, that isn't the end of it. The actual planning application does not become granted until the S106 legal agreement is signed. And we never know, no councillor knows when that legal agreement is signed within their ward. Now, we've got planning applications at Shepshed that went 18 months after the plans committee granted that planning application. But we've never known when the S106 agreement was signed. Now, I'd like that to be put to the plans department, that they let us know, because people will say to us, oh, the 3 years is up on that. It's gone. They can't do anything. But what they don't know is the fact that it wasn't actually agreed until 18 months down the line. And this is something that I would like to go from this committee, for them to consider giving us that information. Has anybody got any comments on it?
Do you want me to introduce the
item? Oh, yes, please.
Yeah. So this is this report's here as part of the annual review of the constitution, and an email was sent out to planning and yourselves to say if you wanted to change any of the planning code of conduct. We did have one response, and which is from the head of planning, and he has suggested that the current sections of the planning code, it would be appropriate to have more, it would be good to have advice, would be helpful to assist all councillors when considering invitations to attend private meetings with applicants or developers. So the code is very clear about what should happen at the present time, and this was actually reviewed only a year ago as well. And the advice is that you always, as councillors, be it as a plans committee member or a councillor, you always seek advice. And I think what the head of planning is trying to do is add in some additional information about what that advice may be. But you must bear in mind that every planning application and situation is very different. So it'd be interesting to hear your views on this. And in terms of what the chairman has just suggested, I think that's not a constitutional matter. I think that's more something that can be referred from here to the head of planning. We can highlight that you would prefer that when you've been considering this item. So, thank you.
Councillor Ransom, then Councillor Draycott.
Previously, and I'm going back some years, that we used to have a briefing prior to the planning sitting. Mm-hmm. You know, we used to have a pre-briefing in the Preston rooms, in the robing room.
Yeah, we did.
Yep, for half an hour to three quarters before the actual planning committee sat. So if the planning committee had any queries or any sort of doubts, they could ask those doubts, get clarity on those doubts, and actually go into the meeting feeling that they could actually openly and honestly look at the planning application in front of them. And I think that should be reinstated again, because that's only my view, because that was very helpful, even for, particularly for a sub as well, because they had to go in, and if you were subbing for somebody on the planning committee, you went in and you went out on the bus, and you came back in and you had your briefing and you were asked, as you were on the bus and out seeing the actual planning items, you took notes and you could ask those questions to the planning officers or the head of planning. He would give you his best answer, or she would give you the answer they feel you was necessity for your question, and that made you go into the meeting a lot more clearer. I don't know.
But
don't
we also had the opportunity to discuss the extras sheet that...
Well, they used to give the extras sheet. And all of that, in that briefing, at the beginning, it meant that people, once you got back, you had your cup of tea or your sandwich or you went in. I can't remember, I'm going back now for about 3 or 4 years, and then all of a sudden it stopped. because they said it was, I don't know, it was time or time consumption. But I did appreciate those meetings because we got a lot of clarity in it and we were able to iron out our doubts. And, you know, I'm sorry, that's just my view.
Councillor Bentley.
Well, Councillor Bentley, the reason why I think that they finished was because there was the possibility that somebody could say that it was being discussed and decided behind closed doors. This was the reasoning behind it. But I totally support your view, Pauline. This, in fact, I found it very, very helpful, and it was very constructive. And you know, in other forums, discussions take place before the events. And I really don't know why we can't continue that here, because I thought it was very helpful. And it was only ever about clarity of points rather than discussing the merits of each case.
If we're finding out that people are thinking that, and it's only a suggestion, Councillor Ranson again, very sorry, but the fact was that I would suggest we put a tape recorder in that briefing, and everything that is said in that briefing can actually be taped. Like everything
that's
been taped here tonight.
Councillor Bentley again. The only thing I'd say about it is not a public meeting, so should it be taped?
I don't know. I'm honest.
I know you're kicking it around here, but I'm not too sure as whether it should be taped.
I wasn't really coming on that point, actually. No. I was going to go back to this.
I was about to say, with the pre-meeting, so I would imagine, I wasn't working at this authority 2-3 years ago, but I would imagine those pre-meetings have been removed because of the concerns regarding predetermination and that perception of having a pre-meeting immediately before a planning committee. And I would imagine, so what we could do is out from this meeting, we could ask the head of planning the reasons for that removal, but I have a very strong suspicion that the reason would have been for that.
Chair, Karen, Ian Bentley again, you're right, that was the reason. But I think that it was really so helpful that we actually had those pre-meetings. I think that the public really have benefited from us not having them, because it gave us an opportunity to sort out some areas maybe of clarity before each meeting. And the other thing I'd like to see introduced is that after the member of the public has spoken, there's no opportunity to have that person back maybe to clarify a point. Now, if this is the Leicestershire County Council, as this on the plans there also, we can ask the person who presented a case to come back just for points of clarification, whereas we don't have that facility. And that's crazy, because sometimes that would be extremely helpful. It's not about having an ongoing debate, but it just gives the elected members an opportunity just to clarify.
So you would like me to investigate what other authorities do to see if that's possible as part of the annual review?
Yes, I would.
So
I think Mary was first, actually.
Oh,
right.
Okay.
I was going to talk about the actual issue on the report, but as we're concentrating on the planning committee, I think if you were a member of the public and you knew that there was a pre-meeting before a planning committee, I'm sorry, but the public perception is that things are going on, etc. So I think it's a very good reason why it stopped. But maybe how you get you get the extra paper, so that's kind of got information on to bring you up to date. But I really think this is something that needs to be taken up at a planning training meeting, and have a proper discussion about this there and then, because you've got the planning officers there. And I think you'll get a lot more out of it by doing it on that occasion. But on the report, if I can, Chair, or do you want to deal with the planning first?
Do you want to deal with this issue first?
Because we've digressed off the agenda.
We'll finish off on this one now, please, and then we'll come back. So, Councillor Bentley.
Councillor Bentley again. Yeah, I understand the point that Mary's making, but I think that we've got to be careful here, because if procedurally it's best for the Plans Committee to do that, what you could, I mean, there's nothing to hide. I mean, the officers could actually say that, we've had a meeting anyway, because most of us go out on a bus, so that's a pre-meeting. The fact that we've got together just before around a table to like to talk about any late information or whatever that's come to light or whatever, just by ignoring that cannot be a good thing. I think it's completely and totally beneficial for all. And if it was a concern, then the officers could state that actually the elected members have had an opportunity to go out and look at the sites that afternoon, and further points of clarification as become necessary have been dealt with before the meeting. Be upfront about it. But no decision was made.
Councillor Robbins.
The time for that, though, of course, is in the public meeting, and I don't think you can get around that. That fundamentally is why they stopped, because you can ask your points of clarification in public, when it's recorded, in front of the applicants, the objectors and everyone else, and then there's absolutely no doubt about the transparency of that decision-making process, whereas to have a pre-meeting it's problematic. But if I can come back to this point, if that's okay, is that right, on the agenda? We've got the comment from the Head of Planning and Regeneration here. I personally don't think there needs to be any change to the current code, so what I'm not entirely clear what the Head of Service is asking for here, but I think the way it's worded now is that councillors can involve them in discussion, in themselves in discussions with developers, but they're basically advised to seek officers' advice. I think that's sensible. Mm-hmm. I don't think that councillors should be compelled to contact officers first, because what if the officers don't want you to talk to that developer? It's just going to be problematic. I think what we've got, which we reviewed a year ago, is fine and does the job.
I think basically the fact is that you are supposed to take an officer with you if you have a meeting with a developer. That is what they would prefer, that you take an officer with you rather than go on your own. The problem is that when you're in a meeting with a developer, you could say something that could totally alter what the officers are doing. So if the officer's with you, he can watch what you're saying. It's one of these things where you meet with somebody, you're private, and you don't know what's being said, and then suddenly the developer comes back and says, well, so-and-so, so-and-so said so-and-so, so-and-so. And then you've got the problem of the fact that, was it said? Has it been promised? You have got to have an officer with you if you go to meet a developer, and for your own good, really. But that is the top and bottom of it, what they're trying to say. Also, when we have letters from developers, and we have several, we have to tell the officers. And possibly let the officers have the letter or a copy of the letter that has gone out to the plans committee. This is due to the fact that we don't read the letters, we just open them, look at them and bin them, rather than, you know, if it's from a developer, because you are only leaving yourself open you're just leaving yourself open to what's the word I'm looking for?
Bias.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And this is where we're having to be very careful at the moment with the number of letters that we are receiving. Mary Draycott, please.
Yes, thank you, Chair. I would actually like to see this made a little bit more clearer, because when I came back on the council, I was quite surprised, because and it was being said quite in different meetings and different experiences that it was perfectly okay to talk to developers. And in my whole time as a councillor, I'd never done that, right? I might go to a public meeting if I wanted to, but even then I'm very cautious about attending, right? And for this it reads, councillors are able to attend public meetings and presentations by applicants development which are open to the public. But I think it needs to be clearer. You've got a new intake of councillors next year who are going to be completely green to all of this, right? And it really does need spelling out that you are advised not to meet developers on your own, that you should report all approaches by developers to the planning officer, and so it's all kept on record and what have you. right, and that's the way you do it. So I don't think this is clear enough. I'd like to see it made a bit clearer, check, really spelt out, you know, that you do not meet them on their own. The words can be tidied up, I'm sure, right, and all contact reported to planning relevant planning officers, Chair.
Karen Widdowson, if I could just clarify, when I've reviewed this section of the Constitution, the section about applying to all councillors and the public meetings and presentations, I do actually think you are right in that we should maybe strengthen that section and say in there, seek advice from the planning service on any meetings that they attend, so that it matches the 8.1, because we're saying that advice should be sought there, but we're not actually saying no, advice should be sought right. there. So yeah. That could be a possible recommendation that from this committee that we're consistent between with that terminology.
Mm-hmm. Councillor Rollins, then Councillor Ransom.
Yeah, my only concern, you know, I don't sit on planning committee. If someone's having an extension in my ward and they say, I'll just come and have a look, and I've had a load of complaints, I wouldn't expect Charnwood to pay an officer to come into, you know, to Birstall to look at a two-storey extension. I mean, I've never had a meeting, I've never had a request for one. But I just think that the wording as it is, applying to all councillors, is fine. It doesn't prohibit you. Chances are you're not going to do it, but it basically strongly suggests you should take advice. For planning committee members, of course, we can see in 8.2 that's very different. You shouldn't agree, and that is right, because ultimately you're the decision maker, and it would be completely wrong for the decision maker to get involved in something before determining that, or even afterwards. But for other councillors, I don't see why we shouldn't talk to a developer. So, for example, I would talk to developers in Birstall about progress on that site. Planning permission's been granted, but they're still an applicant, they're still a developer. Where does that leave me if I want to talk to them about whether or not they've installed dog waste bins on time?
But do you report that to the planning officer?
Not at the minute.
Because that's what you're supposed to do.
And I don't have to. It says that I, you know, that's their recommendation. No. But
yeah.
This is why we're trying to tighten up on it. Councillor Ransom there, Councillor Bentley.
Well, I think you're going into tiger country if you actually do join the actual builder or anything like that, because you're actually you're actually putting your signature to it. Mm. I actually myself, I'm agreeing with Mary and agree with part of what Roy's saying as well, but the fact is we really must be very due diligent on this, because there's been various, it only has to hit the media and you are seen with them, and it has happened with some of our councillors. And to be honest with you, and any paperwork I got when I was permanently on plans, I used to bring it in and give it to the monitoring officer. I used to give it to Adrian, because that way I knew I was clear. I used to open it, look at what it was, and close it, and just set date received and hand it back sealed. Because that, and we have had Shepshed are getting quite more than Barrow, which makes it different, a nice change, but and Salve, you know, but we had a run of buildings in the last 2 years of about nearly 2,000 houses altogether, and we, Paul and myself and Betty, was all been in, and we used to make sure we had officers and know its expenditure and things like that, but you hear the jeers in the actual gallery of it's all fixed. If you have got an officer and the officers up there can say, or the councillor can turn around on that committee and say, I'm sorry, we went out on site to a meeting, but I had officer so-and-so and so-and-so with me, you're in the clear. Mm-hmm. That's my person, and I would never, ever entertain that other than that. I never, myself and Councillor Fryer would never go anywhere without an officer.
No, I wouldn't. Councillor Bentley, then Councillor Fryer.
Yeah, Councillor Bentley. Yeah. Now, you are right, of course, that it is best always to have an officer, or ideally have the meeting here. Mm-hmm. And then that way it's all clear cut. But I think the really important thing to consider here is how it could look and how it can be interpreted. So if it appears that you're having a liaison with a developer, then it could look terrible. So just consider that.
Yes.
And that's the important thing always.
I agree with you.
If in any doubt, always have an officer present.
Yeah.
Councillor Haji-Nicolaou. Now, I think actually the difficulty about the 8.1 is that actually we just pulled together big developments with an extension of a garage. And actually, this is actually the difficulty here. And as Roy said earlier, if Mrs. Smith down the road has a problem with the balcony of the new house next door, I mean, I don't expect to go there actually with an officer. I have the duty to report to the officer that I went to and I had the discussion. Mm-hmm. It's my duty to actually mention the major points of the discussion, which I do anyway. Mm-hmm. But I don't expect to have an officer with me. But if I go to see David Wilson, who had 175 houses actually in the middle of Rothley, I think it's more logical, even as a councillor and not member of the Plans Committee, to have an officer with me. Does it make sense?
Yeah, absolutely.
I think that is what they're getting at, is the bigger developments rather than the smaller household, you know.
Yeah. I think just through you, Chair, some of you may remember the discussion that we had last year or the year before on this matter, and that was when the Head of Planning and Regeneration attended with the Chair of Plans Committee. And I think 8.1 was added in around that time because there was this diversity of meetings that you could possibly get involved in. And I think the Head of Planning was saying that it might not necessarily be practical for an officer to attend, but if you are communicating with the Planning Department and letting them know what you're being asked about and what you're being invited to, they can advise you what's an appropriate course of action to take. And the wording is to sort of basically say, talk to them about it.
Councillor Paul Murphy, I think in 8.3 we should still have seek advice. Seek advice is the answer to everything. With any of this planning, if as long as you, I'm not saying you have to have an officer with you for everything, but seek advice. Ask the officer, say, look, this developer or this person, am I okay to speak to them about this? Please advise me. And that way we're all open and above board.
That's right.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Councillor, my only point, I think 8.1 should stand as it is. I think the councillor should exercise their discretion in deciding whether or not to take advice. I maintain if someone contacts me about a small extension in Birstall, I just don't expect to involve the planning department. I mean, I don't know. I mean, my knowledge of planning perhaps is more than some other councillors, and that's no disrespect to them, it's just my line of work. But I just think that it's quite a serious thing to breach the code of conduct, and by not informing them would be a breach. So I think that it should be left as it is, with the discretion to involve them if you think it's necessary. Clearly, if you're going to go and meet a developer and not involve them, then I would personally say you're probably foolish for doing so. And I think that this pretty well says that, really. It's saying you should take advice, but you don't have to.
I think Roy's hit the nail on the head. Summed it up beautifully, and that we should leave it as it is. Mm-hmm. But it's about degrees, isn't it, what I said before? Mm-hmm. Yeah, if it's a minor issue, it's a minor issue. If it's a substantial issue, it's a substantial issue. And you've got to think about carefully what it is that you're getting involved with. If it's a tiny issue, then it's not a major consideration, is it?
So Karen Widdowson, just for clarity for the minute, so I'm getting the sense that 8.1 you want to keep that same, 8.2 the same, but 8.3, is there any will to have that changed in any way? Or
can you read
at the moment this applies to all councillors. Councillors are able to attend public meetings and presentations by applicants / developers which are open to the public. So in a way you would be going as a councillor to a public presentation which any member of the public can attend, or I'm getting a feel that you might want to add, and it is recommended that councillors seek advice from the planning service before attending.
It would probably be sensible to add that, but it's a public meeting, that's the critical part here. So you're just going along as a member of the public.
Councillor
Rollins, then. I personally wouldn't want to see that one change. So, for example, I don't know, probably a year ago, I went to an open evening about Broadnook. I've got no part in that decision-making process, but clearly it's going to have a big impact on Birstall, the ward that I represent. But again, I wouldn't expect to notify the planning team that I'm going to an open evening that's got a few display boards about Broadnook, because quite frankly, they probably don't care. So that's I would leave it as it is. I'd leave 8.3 as it is. I think if you're attending a public meeting as a member of the public, most often you're probably a resident of that area as well, so you've got an interest and you ought to be showing an interest as a ward member. But I don't. You're not engaging in private conversations with developers or applicants. You're just attending, and providing you're not having private conversations with them at that meeting, then I can't see a problem with it.
If I can clarify, the committee is asked to consider whether any further clarification is required regarding private meetings with applicants, developers, or objectors. So, actually, this discussion about these public meetings, it's the private meetings with applicants.
I think they're looking at adding that into 8.3, along the lines of what's already in 8.1, just closing the loop.
Mm-hmm. Chair, on that point, it is why I would like to see added to it about keeping the department informed about any contact by developers, right? And it's common sense. You're not talking about the family down the road who's having a little alteration to the house. This is about applicants and developers, and the Hastings ward is very busy at the moment with developers, right? Some of them are extremely big and some of them very aggressive, right? And I don't expect an officer to be available all the time. They're doing two jobs now, right? So you've got to be reasonable. So I think the onus is on members then to always keep them informed about conversations, letters and what have you. And I think that's quite simple, and that really just needs adding at the end, Chair, if possible, that you keep all members keep the planning department informed of any contact by developers.
Are you suggesting that as a catch-all, not just under one of these headings, but as an additional...
On the end of 8.3?
Councillor? I understand what you say, but actually, why in the 8.3? Because you see, this should apply for every section, so it should be a completely independent paragraph.
It's to do with contact by developers.
Yeah, it is informing the officers. So no matter actually if the applicant is actually, you know, this is from down the road.
Not the family down the road who's having something quite small done. I think this is talking about developers doing substantial development. And I think you need to be very careful as members. Keep the department informed.
It does not say substantial developer, it says applicants.
Developers.
So this includes, you see, the small family down the road.
Yeah. I think common sense applies. Yeah. Common sense applies.
Well, yeah, but you're trying to write in common sense.
No, it's just an extra sentence, like, also, members keep the planning department informed of any contact by developers or large-scale developments.
What about if we made it 8.4, another one? And brought it in there that we did say large scale developers.
Large scale.
I'm looking at the constitution here, and this is what you've got in the report is a very abbreviated section. The protocol sets out already the role of ward members, applications when it's a plans committee, all councillors, contact with applicants, developers and objectors, application to all councillors, plans committee and all councillors if there's an application back for all councillors. I'm not seeing where this can be added in, your reference. I cannot see where we could add it in.
But it's come out of the discussion.
Can I just come in? If you look at paragraph 9 of the Planning Code of Conduct, there's a section specifically on lobbying of councillors that applies to all councillors, and this says in there, if someone attempts to lobby you, copy or pass on any lobbying correspondence you receive to the head of planning and regeneration at the earliest opportunity, refer to any offers made to you, blah 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 blah, inform the monitoring officer It's done.
It's there. 9.4. It's there.
All there, and that is entirely right, and that covers what we want in much more detail than kind of just adding a sentence, because it is there.
That's fine. That's very sure.
So if you lobbied, then you are obliged already to report that. But I just don't think that attending a public meeting should warrant any kind of notification to the planning team.
Okay, so that's private meetings.
Yeah, private is completely different. Yeah.
Sorry, if I may, I'll just go back to what was mentioned earlier on. The actual the committee's being asked to do, as I understand it, is talking about private meetings, public meetings.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's talking about private meetings with applicants, developers, or objectors.
Yes.
And that's what I'm hearing. That's not really what's been considered so far.
No. So the sense of the committee is that these sentences, these sections are, you want to keep them the same and no changes, because actually they're picked up in other sections of the protocol.
You could put in the minutes that people read it, is 9.4 in the Constitution will go in depth to actually explain the situation.
Not 9 and 10, because 10 actually goes on to specifically deal with planning committee members, and they're under an even bigger...
Then that makes clarity, am I right?
Yeah. There's that reassurance given that...
I'm just thinking, well, if clarity is wanted, then you can refer to it in the minutes, or you can send out an email and just say, you know, look at your constitution if you're worried. 9.4 in your constitution does it more in detail, explains more in detail of what your responsibilities are. So, am I right?
So, Chair, Councillor Draycott, so the question in paragraph 4 regarding private meetings is addressed.
This deals with lobbying and any other offers made to you for any kind of gain or whatever from developers. So it's if someone comes to you and says, here's some material, please support my application, that's when you would have a problem and you'd have to report it. It doesn't change the private meeting situation.
No, and that's the question we're being asked, isn't it?
The question is to consider whether any further clarification is required with the planning code regarding private meetings with applicants, developers or objectors. Is there any further advice?
I think between us we've all said that we should avoid them.
Through the chair, which is what 8.2 says now. They should not agree to any formal private private meeting with applicants, developers, or objectors if you can avoid it.
Yeah.
So it says what we wanted to say.
But that applies to planning committee members only.
Correct.
And what the head
correct.
Of planning and regeneration is asking is whether you want to put that information under 8.3, where it would apply to all councillors.
They should not agree to any formal private meeting with applicants, developers or objectors if you can avoid it, and that goes to all, that would apply to all councils.
The head of planning saying about 8.3, which is public meetings, not private.
If you read the paper, that in point 2 on the report, the head of planning and regeneration is saying section 8.3 of the code relates to all councillors and attendance at public meetings.
Yes.
He's asking whether there should be some advice added to that section regarding private meetings.
Right,
okay. Yeah. The same as for plans committee members.
Yeah.
Can I ask a question? What is a private meeting?
So when a councillor like yourself has a meeting one-to-one with a developer or with a developer and another person, that's a private meeting.
So if it is somebody, a third person, it is not private. You said one-to-one.
Well, it could be the landowner and the developer that's going to develop that land, and then yourself. And then that is a meeting, private meeting between the three of you. It's not public, there's no minutes to it. And what you said on there could really bear a big difference. Councillor,
I suppose a private meeting is where members of the public are not invited.
Yes, it is. Mm,
so
yes.
You need to define what a private meeting is or a public meeting then.
There's got to be a distinction between all councillors and plans committee members there, because, you know, all councillors aren't decision makers, plans committee members are. So if we change that, say we've got to report meetings, then I'll be in breach of it tomorrow when I go to work. It's true though.
But a lot of people, unfortunately, they want something developed in their ward, and they will go to the ward councillor, and it will then suddenly come back. The ward councillor so-and-so said this, and this.
But don't say this.
Even though they probably know that you're not a member of that plans committee, but on the other hand, you could sub on that committee. Because you don't know when you're going to sub.
With plans committee, yeah. Though.
That's right. This is what I'm saying. This is where he's saying about plans committee, but
Councillor Bentley again. So the thing is, you need to be able to enter that plans committee with an open mind.
That's right. You
And if you've entered it with a closed mind, then it's the individual should withdraw from it, walk away from it. So, but that's for the individual to decide, because you can't inside everybody's heads and figure out just what the position is. But it really is, that is the cornerstone of all of this, is can you go in with an open mind?
The problem is that people take councillors' words, if it's a ward councillor, they tend to take their word as gospel. And if I was to say to a developer, oh yes, you'll get it, don't worry, I'll make, then you've got problems, haven't you?
Well, you have if you saw it using that.
But people unfortunately, Ian, people do when they're in a meeting like that. I've heard them, you know.
Excuse me, Chair.
Yeah.
Can I just say
something? Councillor Murphy. It does say also with objectors. So we're all talking about developers, and not having private meetings. I think we should just write somewhere in it that before we have any private meeting or even consider a private meeting, we seek advice.
Yes,
I agree.
So, the question is back to the question.
Keep the department informed.
So, application to all councillors at the moment. The code of conduct talks about public meetings. Do we add in an extra session? Extra section about private meetings, and
Through the chair, unless we can agree an exemption for me, because I'll be breached tomorrow, then yes. I just can't support that
because that's his job.
My job is planning solicitor. I work with developers all the time. I specifically don't sit on the plans committee to avoid this kind of problem. Right. If you make it so that I can't talk to developers at all, then
your job's gone.
It just doesn't work. It can't. That's why I specifically sit as far away from plans committee as I can and have nothing to do with the planning process for that exact reason. So that's why I think there needs to be a distinction between all councillors and plans committee members. They ought to be held to a higher standard than other councillors. And if a councillor is willing to say to a developer that they're going to get permission, then you're in breach of the next paragraph, which is about bribes and whatever else. So I think it ought to say.
Councillor Murphy again. I think, like I say, seek advice, the monitoring officer will tell you. Obviously, it's your occupation. I work in the construction industry. I know quite a lot of people as well, but I'm not talking to them about plans or anything. I would not have a private meeting. You're at work. Work's different. You're not talking about the development, because where's Charnwood's concerned, and, you know, residential things. So if you seek advice off the monitoring officer, it's always above board.
I can't because then I've been breached my professional obligations of confidentiality. Yes.
Councillor Ranson, can we now put a caveat in that certain councillors, and we can name them, like Roy,
I think it ought to remain with the distinction between planning committee members and and all councillors. I just think that distinction ought to remain.
Chair, thank you very much, Councillor Cathy Nicolau. I think actually we need to conclude this one, if I may. I agree with Roy. The constitution as it is now is satisfactory, in my opinion.
I would agree.
Putting actually more things in there, it makes things more difficult for everyone, and it is not practical.
Are you moving 8.18.283?
I'm moving actually the constitution to stay as it is.
I've got a seconder.
I'll second that.
And is that agreed?
Yeah.
Okay.
Wait a minute.
Hang on. That's not
Mm-hmm.
everybody.
Yeah,
four.
Yeah.
Four. So that's unanimous, but not unanimous.
No, it's not, Chair. I've not voted.
You've not voted.
So four have voted yes to stake. Yeah. You vote no
against, and I'd like it recorded, Chair, in the minutes.
Okay. Would you like to be named?
Yes.
Yeah. Yes. Okay. And then any abstains?
Abstain. So how many abstentions have we got?
Two.
Two.
4, 5, 6, 7.
So that, therefore, so you are not going to be making any changes, no suggested changes to the constitution or the code of conduct on that matter. There was two other matters that were picked up in the meeting, in the discussion, and I just need to get clarification. So the first one was about clarification about pre-meetings and the suggestion that they should be reinstated. So during discussion of this item, there was a discussion about that. Would that, should we refer that to the head of planning to look into as part of a training session for the a future training session? So it can be raised at that point.
Yeah, Councillor Bent, yes. But obviously a pre-meeting is only required if it's required. It's not, it doesn't happen every time. If there's no need for it, then there's no need. I think what would happen is that the normally the elected members are there probably in good order, probably a quarter of an hour before the start time. And if there's any items, if they're not there, they're not there. But most of them are on the bus anyway. So if it's necessary, it's. But the other thing I'd really like to look into as well, in addition to that, is what I suggested, where we can actually go back to the speaker for clarification on points. Because sometimes I think that, you know, you can see somebody busting gut say something in the public gallery, and you think, well, if they could say something, they could clarify something for you.
Okay, so as part of the general annual review of the Constitution, we look at that and see what other practices are in place in other local authorities.
Yeah, well, I look at Leicestershire County Council, because they do it.
Okay. And then the Chair, you raised a point about Section 106 agreements and councillors being advised once the Section 106 agreement has been signed up.
Because then we know that the planning application has actually been granted, and then that is the time that it starts. Most planning applications are given 3 years to start from a date, and it's the date that S106. And we don't know it, we're never told, but it would be nice.
I'll second your proposal, if that's a proposal.
Yes, it is.
I think it is, I'll second that.
Thank you very much.
And I think we've picked up everything that we need to now. Nikki, do advise me if you think there's anything missing. There was three.
No, I've got the same.
Yeah, good, thank you.
So we'll go on to the works programme then, for the next meeting.
So the works programme is set out as on the back page, on page 22. There is a suggestion that the regular review of the members' code of conduct and the planning code, which is what you're doing tonight, is actually repeated again in December 2019.
Yeah.
But there's no other suggested changes. Is that it?
Mm. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's all we agree on.
Yeah.
Any other changes that we need to be made aware of? Anything you want adding? No? Thank you.
Thank you very much for coming. And that closes the meeting on 28.
Save the date.